Yeah, I first met His Divine Grace in 1982 at the Navadvip Mart, and that time, my first meeting, I mean, I saw him there, but I didn't meet with him, you can say, until I was ill and I was his patient and he looked after me. I had quite a bad case of amoebic dysentery and other things as well. And he made me go in the room of Harichand Prabhu's room, which was at the front, you know, where the front sort of office is, where Harichand Prabhu used to stay. And so I was in there, and Harichand Prabhu was my nurse, and Srila Govinda Maharaj, he was like my doctor. And he would come every day and give me medicine and treat me, and, you know, he would put ointment on me where I needed it. And, you know, I mean, really, very, very kind. And I had no idea, actually, you know, of his position or his, you know, who I felt, you know, in retrospect, I felt like Arjuna after seeing the universal form of the Lord. Please forgive me all those times, you know. Really, I felt like that now.
And before that experience, you hadn't even noticed him?
I saw him around the temple, and I saw him with Guru Maharaj. You know, and but he's very, his nature was very unassuming and always sort of not, he's just sitting in the background. And I noticed when Guru Maharaj giving a lecture, quite often, you know, there'd be big, big sannyasis there from its on, and you know, other acharyas from the Gaudiya Mott, and he'd just be sitting off to the side, often just like reading the newspaper, or, you know, like almost uninvolved, so to say, it seemed, you know. And then but it was but we know, I noticed that from a very soon, very, you know, after being there for some time, I noticed that Guru Maharaj didn't make any decision at all without consulting with Govinda Maharaj. But Govinda Maharaj himself, he's not that time, of course, he was not showing his form as the Acharya of Chaitanya Saraswatmat. So, you know, he's very modest and, you know, dressed in grihastha clothing, and, you know, going about his business, like managing everything, but almost imperceptibly managing everything, you know. And even when there's, you know, like some function or something, it's not, he's not the person who's giving the lecture or anything. You know, if someone else, it's usually Harichand Prabhu or Aranya Maharaj, who's Krishna Charan Prabhu, then giving the lecture, or another one of the brahmacharis giving the lecture. We never really saw that side, you know, but more or less he's going around making sure everyone has everything they need, but always, you know, Guru Maharaj won't do anything. And if he's not there, then Guru Maharaj definitely won't do anything until his return. Sometimes he had to go to Calcutta or somewhere for some, you know, some service. And if there's any decision to be made, Guru Maharaj would say, when Govinda Maharaj comes, then I'll decide. So, yeah, I mean, it was, and, you know, really, I didn't have any idea at that time. I mean, maybe others knew, but I was just a young boy then, you know, I didn't know anything. And I had no idea that he was Guru Maharaj's chosen successor or any of these things, you know, and I mean, he's not advertising that fact to anybody. You know, if anyone knew that, it was through Guru Maharaj or through other devotees. But, the thing that I noticed was that he's always very eager and anxious to bring everyone to hear from Guru Maharaj. It's like this was, you know, he wanted to make sure everybody had everything that they needed, and you know, even if somebody needed some special food that you know, they weren't, wasn't available at the Mott, he'd make sure they would get that. And, you know, like very, very, always giving advice to the devotees how to stay well, you know, which was the best place to drink water from. And, you know, you couldn't buy bottled water or anything like that in those days. You just have to take your luck, really. And, you know, so he would show us, oh, this is the best well. If you drink from this well, you'll become, you won't become sick. And, you know, don't drink from here. And, you know, many just very, very practical dealings, really, you know, but very, very in a very caring way and very, you know, meticulously taking care of everybody. I noticed that. Yeah.
And when he came out, you know, and can you say something about when did you first start to recognize, you know, the caliber of who he was?
I have to say, you know, that with my hand on my heart, that was after Guru Maharaj disappeared, you know. I mean, I heard some things that Guru Maharaj said about him, but, you know, I wasn't able to really digest that or even think about that, to be honest. You know, everyone was so focused on Srila Sridhar Maharaj.
Yeah.
We never thought that, what will happen when Guru Maharaj disappears. We just couldn't allow ourselves to even think that, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, when Guru Maharaj gave Srila Govinda Maharaj his chair, you know, more or less 3 years before he passed away, then we knew this, he will be Guru Maharaj's successor.
Yeah.
And even before that, I heard Guru Maharaj say, that the very famous things that we know, you know, he's a natural Paramahamsa. I've always considered that his service is never anything less than on the Nirguna plane. And, you know, like, he's more qualified even than I am. And, you know, these things, I heard all of those things myself from Guru Maharaj. So, you know, then I knew, oh, this is Guru Maharaj's, Yeah, well, I mean, those three. I mean, maybe he made other statements as well, but those three, I was present when he said those things, yeah. And, you know, but even then, I never really thought of him, you know, like in any kind of similar way to Srila Guru Maharaj.
Right.
Just because of his, he was so unassuming and, so, you know, he never asserted himself in any way, really, you know. So, and even when Guru Maharaj gave him gave sannyas to him, gave him the chair. I mean, all the things that we know now, you know, what the conversations were between Guru Maharaj and Gurudev, that was all behind closed doors. I didn't know anything about that. Most of us, you know, the rank and file, we didn't know anything about what was going on in the background. Maybe a few, you know, maybe Goswami Maharaj and a few others knew all these things, you know, but certainly not me. And you know, even when, after he was made the Acharya of the Mott, and, you know, then we started to see his nature. But even then, you know, of course, in the presence of Guru Maharaj, he's always pushing people to Guru Maharaj still, you know, almost like, he was like Guru Maharaj's, you can say, officiating priest, you could say, almost. You know, it was more like that until actually Guru Maharaj was then no longer physically present with us. And that was when Srila Govinda Maharaj really started to show his, you know, who he was as the Acharya of our mission. For me, I have to say, it took time before I was able to really appreciate, if I could even say that I can appreciate, but, you know, to see what his glories actually were, you know. And I remember going to Navadvip the first time after Guru Maharaj's disappearance. I was filled with, you know, with a lot of trepidation of what's going to be like, you know, being here without Guru Maharaj, you know, Guru Maharaj's room vacant, and, you know, and it was quite difficult even to walk through the gates of the Mott after Guru Maharaj's disappearance was very difficult and emotional, you know. So, and at that time, you know, Srila Govinda Maharaj was in like his quarters. He didn't really come to Guru Maharaj's quarters unless there was some, you know, official, you know, like giving diksha or giving Harinam or something for that purpose. He would come there. But more or less, he's staying in his quarters, you know, which we knew. The design, if you like, the construction of those quarters was a lot different to how it is today.
Right.
Then it was like a corridor there outside of his room. And I remember, you know, going to see him up there. The first time, actually, in the time of Guru Maharaj, I'd never ever been in his quarters up there ever. So this was like new for me to go into this room. Was the, you know, the first time I'd ever been there. And I went upstairs and, you know, and I went along and he was having breakfast in the room, I remember. He was with Dunamani Prabhu and with Aravinda Lochan Prabhu and a few others, but I can't remember who else. But I remember Dunamani Prabhu and Aravinda Prabhu were there. And you know, in the time of Guru Maharaj, you didn't go near to Guru Maharaj unless you were invited to do so. It wasn't like you just stroll into Guru Maharaj's room and sit down and, you know, like we're used to doing with Srila Govinda Maharaj. There wasn't anything like that, you know. In fact, you'd be heavily chastised if you did something like that. So it was, you know, if Guru Maharaj was giving a lecture, or you had some particular service, or you were invited, you know, by Srila Guru Maharaj himself, his room was like off limits all the time.
Right.
So, you know, so then I was, you know, I was shy to go into Srila Guru Dev's room, and he's taking breakfast with the devotees, and I can hear him laughing and joking, and, you know, so I just sat myself outside of the room, like against the wall, and not even in sight of the door, because I didn't want, you know, to be noticed by Gurudev or anything, you know. I was feeling very shy and very, you know, kind of reticent to do that. And you know, Gurudev was, but after, you know, maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, he realized someone was outside. And I heard, who is there? Who's outside? And timidly I said, oh, Gurudev, we didn't call him Gurudev actually then, we called him Maharaj. Yeah, so, it's Devashish Maharaj from London, I said. And then he told, oh, Prabhu, come in, why you've been sitting outside for so long? And I went in and, you know, then he made someone bring me some prasadam and, you know, and we sat together. And really that was kind of like our, you know, if you like, and it was like in a way our first meeting as you know, since Guru Maharaj's disappearance. And you know, previous to that we'd had, you know, I knew him of course before, and but in a different incarnation, if you like, you know, it was you know, so it was kind of strange in a way, you know. It's like I suppose, of course, the comparison is stupid, but it was, if you like, it was like the devotees meeting Krishna after he'd gone to Dwarka, you know, and now he's a prince, he's not that, the cowherd boy anymore, you know. Of course, to make such a comparison is, of course, foolish and silly, but, you know, that just came to my mind. It was like, now he's in a different, but that was my thinking.
Yeah.
But actually, he was just the same as before. No difference at all, except that, you know, now he had the mantle of the acharya of the Mott there, and of course he was having to show that to some degree, you know. but it took me some time, you know, and also there were some other, some elements who were against Srila Govindamaharaj, right, as you know, I'm sure. And some of those were previously very close friends of mine. And so they had, tried to, you know, like convince me of their point of view, so to say, you know, so I was maybe a little bit tainted by that also. But I had a relationship with Srila Govindamaharaj from before, and once, you know, I kind of got over my kind of shyness and awe, if you like.
Yeah.
Then when we were alone, I actually told him all the things that these people had said to me, you know, like disparaging, discouraging things about Srila Govindamaharaj. I mean, obviously, I won't go into any of those. But I thought the only way that I can clear my heart of these things is to place them before him, you know. So then I told him, Maharaj, this Prabhu told me this, and this Prabhu said that, and all of these things, you know, then, you know, and these, and they're troubling my mind and my heart, you know, then you please, you know, help me. And he did, you know, I mean, he told me, you know, he gave me, like you can say, more than satisfactory replies to all of my doubts, all of my, and then finally he said, Prabhu, if you still doubt who I am, then you please just come and live with me and you can see every day what I do and who I am and, you know, just come and be satisfied. Yeah. And I said, oh, Maharaj, nothing would please me more than to do that. But unfortunately, I can't. But I have no need to do that, Maharaj. After you've told me everything, I'm fully satisfied with what you said. You know? Of course, maybe I should have done that. Maybe my life would be a lot different now if I had. But so, you know, it took time. But during that time, I mean, you know, I have to say that, you know, we were with Srila Guru Maharaj, myself, 6 years association I had with Srila Sridhar Maharaj. Yeah. And with
Srila, you were staying in India.
Not for the whole time.
Coming back and forth.
Yeah, going back and forth. But sometimes I'd be there 6 months or, you know, a few months at a time. So every year, since I was connected with Guru Maharaj, every year I would go there and serve and hear and, you know, have Guru Maharaj's association once, sometimes twice in a year. And 6 years, but all that time I had the company of Srila Govindamaharaj in, you know, one way or another. And then after Guru Maharaj's disappearance, you know, so, with including those 6 years, over 25 years I had association of Srila Govindamaharaj, then, you know, that's like a whole lifetime, you know? So, and I can say, you know, with my hand on my heart, and I'm sure that, you know, not meaning any slight to Srila Sridhar Maharaj, and I'm sure he wouldn't take it as that. In fact, I think he would be happy for me to say that more substantially, I consider Srila Govindamaharaj as my guru.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Guru Maharaj was kind of, you can say, you know, Srila Govindamaharaj often used the example of the family doctor and the consulting physician. You know, the consulting physician may be a little bit more aloof and, you know, he gives his advice, but, you know, the family doctor, he'll like take some personal interest. No, you have to take the medicine. So it was almost like that, you know, Srila Guru Maharaj, like the consulting physician and Srila Gurudev, like the family doctor, you can say, you know, in my life, at least, you know, and really my understanding, appreciation, and my relationship with Srila Sridhar Maharaj became more full through my service and association of Srila Govinda Maharaj. There's no question about that. More real, if you like, you know, it was almost, almost a superficial relationship. You know, okay, when I was there a few times, Guru Maharaj was, you know, very affectionate to me and very, you know, personable to me. But then when I, you know, I have the experience, like when I stayed there, the longest time that I stayed there, and every day I was going to see Guru Maharaj, and Guru Maharaj was like, oh, Devashish Guru, you've come, have you had prasadam? And, you know, like this. And so, you know, you get the, you start thinking you have some kind of intimate relationship there. But then after leaving and then returning the following year, he couldn't remember who I was at all. You know, I went up, I remember Sagar Maharaj saying, oh, let's go and see Guru Maharaj after I arrive. Guru Maharaj is, you know, sitting on his veranda, we can go and sit. So I went up, and when I went in before him, he said, and Sagar Maharaj said, oh, you know, like, happily telling, oh, Devashish Prabhu is here. And Guru Maharaj saying, oh, Devashish, he is Swami Maharaj's shishya. No, Guru Maharaj, he's your my shishya. First and second, my sister, yeah, and where he's from, San Jose? No, Maharaj, he's from London. Oh, from, like, he couldn't remember me at all. So I think that was a kind of Krishna, you know, trying to put me in my place. You know, you're not an intimate associate of Srinivasa Dharmaraj. You're just imagining that, you know. But so, you know, then, you know, I really feel that that after Guru Maharaj's disappearance, actually, it was a terrible, you know, like tragedy in my life, you can say, as all of our life, but another new phase of my spiritual life began in the association of Srila Govinda Maharaj, and for me, it was the most important, even more important than that of my time and service of Srila Sridhar Maharaj directly. And it's quite hard to say that in one sense, you know, but actually I have to be honest, and, you know, that's what I feel, you know, and I really feel that Guru Maharaj would be happy for that, actually.
So, what is it, would you say when Srila Gurudev started coming to the West that you, like, began to really see his,
form, yeah, certainly. I mean, definitely. I mean, and through the association of his associates, if you like, you know, we saw another side to him that we never saw before. And, you know, I mean, to begin with, it was kind of almost in a formal way. Yeah, Srila Guru Maharaj has given him his chair. We respect that. We honor that, you know. But to actually see his light, just, you know, see him shining in the light of who he was, that, you know, that when he started coming to the West, yeah, that was when, I guess, when we really started to see that, or were able to appreciate that, you know. But I remember always, and in fact, this is also, you know, like your memory kind of, you slot things in place in your memory, in hindsight, you know, when you don't always remember the things as they were at the time. But I remember there was one incident when because I was serving at our Mott in London. I was the cook there for some years. Cook, and I was the pujari, and I did other things, but this time I was the cook, and the devotee who was in charge there, he was an American devotee, and a good man, and one day we had a fight, and it was on a festival day. I can't remember which day, maybe Janmashtami, or, you know, what, anyway, whatever festival day it was, and the offering, I was all by myself in the kitchen trying to make, you know, the feast for the offering, and the offering was late. So he came in to find out why the offering was late, and he was very heavy with me, you know, told, oh, why the offering's late? And I said, oh, it's okay. I've already spoken with Sagar Maharaj about it, which I had, and Sagar Maharaj had said, don't worry, you know, when it's ready, we'll, you know. And he said, but he's not in charge here, I'm in charge here. And, you know, and you get the offering ready on time. And it, like, really, like hammering me. And being a young and impetuous and angry young man, the dough that I was making with the for the chapatis or puris or whatever it was, I picked it up and clobbered him over the head with it. And you know, and then I walked out, stormed out, and in fact we met a few years ago. I say a few years ago, about 10 years ago in California, and we spoke about that, and he forgave me for that. But at the time, he was very angry, obviously, and I was living. I wasn't living in the temple at the time. I had a little bedsit nearby, just up the road, and that night I had a letter like pushed under my door. And when I opened it was from him, and he said, "Your service is no longer required at this temple. Please don't come back." So, okay. So then, you know, for nearly a week, I was just staying at home and, you know, lamenting my situation. But then, maybe, you know, within a week, I got, another letter. A phone call from him saying, "Please, Prabhu, come back and do your return to your service." I said, "Oh, okay, I'm coming." And, you know, we kind of apologized to each other. But unknown to me, the reason why he asked me to return to the service was that he'd received a telegram from Srila Sridhar Maharaj. And that telegram, which was, you know, obviously there was no email or anything. There wasn't even a telephone in Navadvip Mott in those days. And this is, if we wanted to communicate with anybody quickly, that was the way you did it, a telegram. And so the telegram had come to him, and basically the gist of the telegram was, "I gave Devashish Prabhu this service, and I will be the one who takes it away from him, not you. So you ask him to return to his service until you hear differently from me." So he showed me the telegram and everything, but it was only years later that I found out what it was that prompted Guru Maharaj to send that telegram, and it was Srila Govinda Maharaj. And somehow, you know, on the devotee grapevine, the news had got back to Navadvip as to what had happened. And Srila Govinda Maharaj had heard this, and, you know, it was being relayed to Srila Guru Maharaj, and in front of Srila Govinda Maharaj, and they're telling, "Oh yeah, he, you know, clobbered this devotee over the head," and then Srila Govinda Maharaj, I heard this later from another devotee, not from Srila Gurudev himself, but who was there, and Srila Gurudev said to Guru Maharaj, "Oh, but Devashish Prabhu, he's a very nice boy." And then Guru Maharaj was, "Oh," because Gurudev had said that. Then Guru Maharaj decided, "Okay, then we will, you know, send this telegram and have him reinstated in his service." So it was like, you know, I don't know what, you know, without Srila Gurudev's intervention, let's say, you know, where I might be today, I don't know. But so, you know, that was one thing that I didn't know until many years later, that Srila Gurudev had that, you know, opinion about me. And really, of course, I was just a boy then, you know, it's just like maybe in my very early 20s. Yeah, so saved again by Srila Gurudev's grace.
Okay, and you can answer this question how you like. Can you share some very like special, outstanding exchange you had? No doubt you had so many, but one or a few, whatever comes to mind, is very striking.
Well, I mean, you know, yeah, I mean, there are many. And I remember the first time when he came to my house, at that time I was living in Sydenham in South London, and I had a maisonette, a three-bedroom maisonette there, and I invited Srila Gurudev to come with the devotees to take prasadam there, and he came. There were many devotees who came that time, and he came, and Goswami Maharaj came, and I think Giri Maharaj, I think Janardhan Maharaj, I think Sagar Maharaj, Bhakti Prapanna Tirtha Maharaj, Bhakti Lalita, and you know, like many, all the devotees that could like fit in also came as well. But so while we were preparing the prasadam, he asked me to show him around my house. So I took him, you know, like it was on two floors, and to get to the first floor, you had to go up a stairs because it was above a flat below. So you begin on the first floor, and then there's a second floor above. So we went. I went and showed him every room, and when he came to, you know, like my room, and every single room, he went into every single room, and opened every cupboard and looked in every drawer. That, like, if I had anything to hide, he was going to see it. And every room, he opened every cupboard and opened every, and rummaged, you know, through every drawer and everything. And we came downstairs, and, you know, in my kitchen, he opened the fridge to check everything that I had in the fridge, and everything I had in my kitchen cupboards. Like, there was nothing that was left unexamined. I felt so happy. That he felt so at home that he could do that, you know. He didn't feel any problem to do that at all, and that made me feel so happy. Uh-huh. That was one thing I remember, and then I remember when he was leaving, after taking prasadam and everything, and that evening, then he asked me, "What part of London is this?" And I said, "Oh, this is Southeast London." And he said, I should just say before that, when he's sitting there, in the living room, he was sitting and, you know, having a hot drink you know, just relaxing. And then he said, "Oh, Prabhu, any ease lover would be very happy in your ashram here," he told us. And of course, his joke, you can say, but I also felt that, you know, because Guru Maharaj always said, "Oh, my Guru Maharaj said I was an ease lover," and, you know, like, right. Srila Maharaj referred to himself as an ease lover. Right. And Guru Maharaj, Srila Govinda Maharaj, knew that I know that. And so right. My feeling was that he was saying Guru Maharaj would be happy here. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Maybe it's a bit too much for me to think that, you know, but that was how I felt at the time. And then when he was leaving at the end, and he asked me, "What part of London is this?" I said, "This is Southeast London, Marge." And then as he was going out the door, he said, "Sri Chaitanya Sarasvat Mat, Southeast London branch, Ki Jai." Uh-huh. You know, that was a really wonderful time for me. That was the first time he ever came to my house. And so many things. I remember one evening when we were at the Green Street Mott, and one evening he said to me, "Oh, Prabhu, I'm feeling really bored. Can you take me somewhere?" And I said, "Yeah, Marge, of course." He said, "Do you have your car here?" I said, "Yes, outside." And he said, "Let's go." And we just went. And he jumped in the front of my car, and we went. And there was just he and I and Bhimalananda Prabhu, who was his coca then. And we were going, and I said, "Where do you want to go, Marge?" He said, "Take me anywhere, you know." So I just drove around. We went to central London, and I drove around central London, like, show from the car. It was the evening time, but from the car, I'm showing him the sights, you know. Yeah. And I was showing him the Tower of London, and I was telling him how, you know, they used to like cut off the heads of the traitors here, you know, and And he's like relating this to Bhimananda in Bengali, in the sitting in the back seat, and Bhimananda's like staring wide-eyed, you know, they chopped off their heads here, yeah. And I said, yeah, even one of the queens had her head cut off here. And he's telling, I remember Gurudev telling, Raj Mata Hogya! And Bhimananda, ah! That was very nice, with you know, short time evening together. We went there, but another, you know, I can say, you know, like many, so many. Another one that comes to my mind is when he came to London, and there was a lot of disturbance in the temple at that time, you know, and in the talk, he was giving a talk in the evening, and the devotee who'd been, you can say, responsible for that disruption and problem at the time, and Gurudev is like speaking about that devotee and giving so much glorification to him, about him. I don't remember if he was personally present or not. I can't remember, but Gurudev like praising him and praising him and praising him. And afterwards, we were upstairs in his room. There was myself, Bhakti Lalita, and Srila Gurudev. And he told me, he looked at me and with that kind of smile on his face, and he said, "What did you think of my lecture, Prabhu?" Uh-huh. And I said, "Marj, actually, if you forgive me, I think it was too much." Uh-huh. And he said, Why do you say that? I said, well, Marge, you know, I mean, surely you shouldn't be praising him. You should be chastising him and giving punishment to him. Uh-huh. And he said, no, everything I said is true. I can prove it. And I said, yes, I know, Marge, but I just wondered if it was really appropriate. You know, just forgive me, but it seemed like it was too much praise to me in the circumstance. And he looked at Bhakti Lalita and he said, what do you think? And she said, yeah, maybe a bit much, Maharaj. Maybe it was a bit too much. And Gurudev said, oh, what can I do? I'm just practicing my religion. And, you know, it's like, seemed a little kind of offended, you can say. Not so much, not offended, but like unhappy at our response, you know. So then I said, oh, Marge, yes, Marge, of course, and I'm sure you're right, but it just from my mundane perspective, it felt like that, you know. Then you know, he meant something else. Then a few days later, you know, like many kind of miraculous things happened at that time, you know, like, and those few days later, then I said, Marge, what did you do? You did some miracle here, you know, and now I see that all that praise and everything you gave him, it was perfectly appropriate. And, you know, you please forgive me for my stupidity. And he said to me, Prabhu, I don't know any other way. This is what Guru Maharaj taught me, to give honor to everyone. And why do I do that? Because I've seen in my life that nothing else works. It's the only thing that works. And you know, then I felt, well, this is a real lesson for me. You know, this is really is a lesson for me. So these are, I mean, I could go on for hours and hours, but you know, I know our time's not so long. So, but these are a few things that just kind of sprung into my mind now. Yeah, well, of course, you know, we know that Prabhupada told that, didn't he? That was Prabhupada's, in that letter, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, he said, I can see you are becoming a transcendental humorist. And, I mean, I don't know anything about transcendental, but certainly Gurudev was so funny and so humorous that, and that his nature was like a like a boy, you know, like he had so much joy. And, you know, that his whole demeanor was like a young boy. And I think that sometimes all of us forgot how elderly he was, you know, that we thought he was like young boy, like we were, you know, and it was difficult for us to, you know, to sometimes we were maybe our response was a little bit inappropriate, maybe, you know. But, yeah, I mean, what can I say? I mean, so many funny things he did and he said. And I remember in London one time, when they offered him Ram Sundar Prabhu's mango ice cream.
Yeah.
He made that a mango ice cream. And they offered Gurudev, and Gurudev was sitting there, and Sagar Maharaj was sitting with him, taking prasadam, and a few others. And I was there. I think I was serving him. And he was taking the prasadam, and he told Sagar Maharaj, "Oh, Maharaj, you are a Tridandi sannyasi. You should not take ice cream. It is not proper for a Tridandi sannyasi to take ice cream." And then while he's saying that, in front of him, he's got like a huge bowl of this mango ice cream. And he's eating that, and, you know, like really, you can see really relishing that. And with every mouthful, he's like looking at Sagar Maharaj and shaking his finger. And with each mouthful, he's telling not to take ice cream, Maharaj. And then himself take. And everyone was laughing so much. I really feel that Gurudev, he had such a transcendental relationship with Mahaprasadam. You know, somebody mentioned to me the other day, oh, about another person who's also a Bengali man. Oh, yeah, he also was like Gurudev. He could talk about prasad, about food for hours and so on, and, you know, like relishing it. Maybe it's just because they're both Bengalis that they were trying to make something. And I said, Prabhu, actually, I never heard Gurudev talk about food. I only ever heard him talk about Mahaprasadam. And you know, it wasn't a mundane thing at all, you know. It was a transcendental thing. You really felt that when he was taking prasadam, and if you want taking prasadam, and he could remember, you know, something that he took at some person's house and who cooked it, and, you know, and like from 40 years ago, and he would describe that thing in so much detail that you wanted to eat that yourself. Almost it was like you were eating that yourself, you know, but it certainly wasn't food that he was talking about. It was prasadam, and it was really, you felt it was a transcendental way that he was speaking about that, you know. And so many things. I mean, what can we say? You know, Gurudev, we only have to like see him and see how he was and what he did. And then we would know how, you know, what we should aspire to be in our own devotional life. Okay.
Right here by the office.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, of course, without a doubt, it has to be Trinada Prisuni Chena Tororiva Suhishnuna Amani Namada Dena Kirtaniya Sadahari. I mean, I sometimes think, you know, when we talk about everything being personal and everything having its personification, sometimes I think that verse, he is the personification of that verse of Mahaprabhu, you know, that everything that he did exemplified that and showed that and taught us that. And this one thing, you know, if you will say, what one thing did he come to teach us? And if there was only one thing, then it would have to be this. But, you know, he taught us so many things about devotional life, about service, about, you know, how to, how we should relate with one another, you know, all these things. But, you know, but underlining that, and, you know, as the foundation of that is this humility, tolerance, and giving honor to others.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just speaking that, you know, it wasn't just telling that. It was, he was that. He showed that, like, so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, I have to say that that's, to me, and I'm sure to many, that stands out as the most significant. That is his teaching in a nutshell. Is that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can you say your feelings about what is his unique contribution to our Sampradaya?
He himself was so unique, actually. You know, he wasn't at all a stereotypical devotee, if there is such a thing, you know. I mean, in many senses, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, if there's a, like, an Akashic encyclopedia of spiritual life, and you were to look up the definition of a sadhu, you would see a picture of Srila Sridhar Maharaj next to that definition. You know. He's like, you can say, in a way, a stereotype of what is a sadhu, in the best sense of the word. You know, I don't mean that in any wrong sense. But Srila Gurudev, he's like, not like that, you know? I mean, he's so unique. Like, what can we say? I mean, it's almost too easy to say an avadut, but, you know, then... But I think in a way so real and so human.
Yeah.
That was the thing which struck me so much, you know? It's so human.
Yeah.
So so practical, pragmatic, and so much affection for everybody. Who met him went away feeling bad. You know, everybody came away feeling like they were someone special after having his connection, however short or long that was. You know, he made everybody feel like that. And even he said, you know, this is my fault, is that I believe everybody and I embrace everybody. You know, but, and so you can say almost to a fault, he was giving of himself, so much giving of himself, you know, and I remember, you know, when he sometimes, two or three times in the last times when he came to London, he was so ill when he came, you know, everybody told him,
yeah,
you know, you shouldn't travel, you know, you shouldn't leave India, you shouldn't, but he's coming anyway, you know, he's not listening to any of them. And he, you know, even we're saying to him, Marge, if you're not well, don't come. It's okay. You know, everyone will understand, you know. But he's coming anyway, you know. And even when we say to him, you know, was this the best idea to come right now, Marge? You know, you're really not. I remember lying in the room upstairs with an enlarged heart. And, you know, he was really in quite a bad way. And the doctor had to come to see him, you know. And he just laughingly said, he said, what's the difference if I die here or if I die in Navadvip? You know, at least I'm here, I'm doing Guru Maharaj's service, preaching, you know, which is what Guru Maharaj wanted me to do. So then he said, I want to die in the saddle, he said. You know, many said that, you know, so.
That was his last visit to London?
No, a few times before his last visit to London, actually. Yeah, I mean, he was really not well at that time, and it was, you know, against all medical advice that he came. But he's, anyway, you know, I mean, he had so little care for his own self, and he was giving himself so much to everybody. Sometimes it was almost intolerable for us to see how much he wanted to give himself to you know. And in the service of his Guru Maharaj, I mean, this is, you know, you'll never find another devotee with so much so much love and affection for his Guru Maharaj and willing to extend that to everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, but never think anything of himself. He really didn't. He never really considered himself as anybody special and, you know, whatever he had. Genuinely, he felt that he was just carrying the grace of Guru Maharaj. He wasn't, that he, you know, that he was a conduit for that he was a satellite for that. But he never felt that it was his property. And that shone out from him all the time, you know.
So even, can you say that last part again? That's so noisy here.
What was that? What was that I was saying?
You were saying how he saw himself only as a conduit. And
yeah, a conduit, a satellite, a carrier of Guru Maharaj's grace, but he never considered that it was his property.
Right.
You know, I mean, he knew that he was infinitely blessed by Guru Maharaj. You know, he considered that to be the case. He didn't consider that he didn't have Guru Maharaj's grace, that he didn't have Guru Maharaj's blessing. You know, above everyone, he had Guru Maharaj's grace and Guru Maharaj's blessing. There's no question about that. But he never felt that it was his property. He always felt, you know, it was like entrusted to him for others. And that, those others being us, you know, actually, he wanted to give that to us. So yeah, I mean, unique. I mean, and he's able to extract the real essence of spiritual life and present that in a most practical and manageable and understandable way to everybody. You know, from whatever their background is, you know, I mean, you only have to look at that book that Sripad Tyagi Maharaj made. You know, Revealed Truth. It's extraordinary. I mean, really, you know, I feel that if you read that book, you'll see that he's up there with the greats, Rupa Goswami, Kabiraj Goswami, you know, Raghunath Das Goswami, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know, he's a devotee of that same type of caliber, and that really, that comes through in that book. You know, Tyagi Maharaj done a marvelous service to the world by presenting Gurudev in this way, you know. Because Gurudev, his nature, very self-effacing nature, he's not showing himself to be, you know, a great pundit or a great scholar, or, you know, he's always telling, oh, I'm very fallen, I'm just a village boy, and this and that. And, you know, but if you read that book and, you know, you had some association with Srila Gurudev, you'll see that really his position is so unique, because not only was he able to represent that highest thing, he was able to mix with everybody, you know. And Guru Maharaj would say, I can't mix with everybody, you know. I find it a little difficult. But Gurudev had no problem at all. You can say, in one sense, he was a man of the world. You know, he knew the world, he knew everything. He was able to relate to the world in every possible way, but at the same time, he was like completely from another world, and he was able to convey that to us in the simplest way, and as he would say, heart to heart, in a heart-to-heart way, you know. And it's like, it wasn't so much about the theory, although he knew that better than anybody, but you know, just in his dealings with everybody, we saw, you know, we saw spiritual life in reality. This is his unique contribution, I think.
Were you present at that time? Are you able to properly tell that story?
No, I wasn't present actually at that time, but I did hear about it from Gurudev himself and from others, you know. But I was actually not present at that time. But yeah, it was at like the Vedanta Society or something that they'd arranged that Gurudev would give a lecture there. And this man who, you know, some Pandit Shastri, this or that or whatever, I don't know, but he was telling everybody, you know, that his lecture was basically telling everybody how qualified he was, how he was the only person in Switzerland that was representing Vedic culture and Vedanta, and, you know, telling, and you know, just mainly telling everybody how qualified he was. And then after that, when Gurudev was asked to speak, and Gurudev said, yes, and our gracious host, you know, he's very, as he has told us all how qualified he is and everything. So, but I have to say, I have no qualification at all. I'm just a village boy, you know. I'm just a boy from the village who had the grace of my Guru Maharaj, and you know. And then he went on to give like a lecture that just blew everybody away. But I can't really represent that very well because I wasn't there, so I can't really. Even when I was there sometimes, you know, I remember once when we were in Germany and Gurudev gave a super beautiful lecture there to the devotees. And when we were in London, I said, oh, Marge, that lecture you gave was so wonderful and appreciable. And you know, I was trying to express to him how much I was inspired by that. And then he just said to me, what did I say? And I couldn't remember anything that he said. Actually, I can't remember, Marge. And he looked at me like, and I just felt like, what an idiot I am. Whereas we know Guru Maharaj, when Guru Maharaj was teaching Srila Gurudev, and Gurudev was like, you know, dozing while Guru Maharaj was explaining something to him. And then, and Guru Maharaj was like, hey, wake up, you know, what did I just say? And then like represented that. Actually, what you said, Marge, was this, and Guru Maharaj was like so taken back. Oh,
right.
But you were sleeping. How would you know that? Uh-huh. he knew everything Guru Maharaj said perfectly, he could represent that. He's certainly not an ordinary person, we all know that. Yeah, of course that may be different for everybody, have their own feeling on that. I don't know what, you know, I'm not sure I can give the definitive answer on that. But for me, I think, you know, I think now, as Srila Sridhar Maharaj says, you know, in the absence of our Gurudev, then the testing time will come to the devotee, you know, how much of what he taught me is just lip deep appreciation, or how much of it is actually entered into who I am, how much. So I think, you know, the really how to continue serving him in the absence of his physical presence is to try and be what he wanted us to be. The thing that he wanted to give to us, we have to try and become that now, you know, he's given us everything, you know, like sometimes he would say, why are they always asking me for their blessings? I'm always giving blessing, you know, then why they keep asking again and again and again? You know, he gave us everything that we need. And, you know, now we have to go up deeper within ourselves and reflect on that and try to become that as much as we can. Try and make that part of who we are. Not just part of who we are, but finally entirely who we are, you know, then
right.
You know, this is, you know, we can't keep you know, like deferring and abdicating our spiritual life to somebody else or to you know, the institution or, you know, or the movement or whatever it is. We ourselves have to become that now, you know. We have to become more introspective and try to follow the things that he has taught us. And, you know, like you see, maybe you don't see that in India, but sometimes you see people, they have wear these T-shirts. I've seen someone wearing a T-shirt, it's got a picture of the Buddha. What would the Buddha do, it says. Or there's another one with Lord Jesus on. It says, what would Jesus do? So, you know, now we have to think, what would Gurudev do? You know, in our life, how we relate with everybody, how we behave ourselves, what we will do from now on, we must always be guided. What would Gurudev do in this situation? You know, what would his response be? Of course, not in an imitation way, but in a substantial way. You know, like, what has he taught us about this? If we make that the guiding light of our life, then, you know, then everything that we do must be in line with his service, because that's what he was about, you know. And substantially, he wanted to bring everybody to the lotus feet of Srila Sridhar Maharaj. You know, that was his whole life, you know. So if we can try to deeply absorb those teachings of Srila Sridhar Maharaj, which he personified like nobody else, then really this is how we will continue our service to him in the future. And we have to try to continue what he began, the Sri Chaitanya Sarvamat and mission that he And we have to try and we have to try and represent that in our life, you know, not just in an external way, but in a deep way, and try to share that with others, you know. I think this is how we should feel now. It's not that everything's the same now that Gurudev's left, because everything's not the same. Just like when Srila Sridhar Maharaj left, it isn't the same now. You know, like Srila Gurudev himself, he said, when Guru Maharaj was present, I felt I could jump off the top of Gauranga Setu Bridge. No problem. Guru Maharaj is there to catch me. You know, whatever my good, my bad, everything, Guru Maharaj is there to protect me, and he'll absorb everything. But he said, but now Guru Maharaj isn't present. Now it's like the buck stops here now, you know? So now we have to be responsible ourselves as disciples of followers of Srila Govinda Maharaj. It's not enough to just profess that. We have to really become that, you know, and realize the buck stops here with us, you know, with every one of us. Then if we can't be the best that we can be in his service, then what's the point, you know? Then we have to try to do that, you know. We have to try and be that. We have to try and go deeper. Go more internally and focus on the example that he gave us. Then I think we'll be successful, and our mission will be successful. And service to the Vaishnava, this is important, you know. This is the first lesson we learned from Guru Maharaj, Srila Sridhar Maharaj. Service to Vaishnavas. And this is more important than anything else. You know, our problem is we think we're Vaishnavas. But this is wrong, you know. We should think they're all Vaishnavas and we're their servants.
You feel that was Srila Sridhar Maharaj's first lesson?
Yeah, that was the first thing that I got after leaving ISKCON and coming to Sri Chaitanya Sarasvatmat. This was the first thing that the impression I got in my heart above everything else is that service to the Vaishnava is everything. So, you know, let's, and we don't know who is a Vaishnava, you know, so let, you know, err on the side of caution, try to give our service to every Vaishnava. It's not our job to be judging it, who's good, who's bad, who's, you know, what percentage Vaishnava they are. They're all Vaishnava. From our perspective, they're all Vaishnava. And those who are serving Gurudev and Guru Maharaj, like, all the time, then we have to try and help them as much as we can, assist them. Then, then we'll get the blessings of Guru Maharaj and Gurudev. That I have no doubt at all. So again, this also means we have to become introspective, and then we can see who we are and what is our duty, and our duty is to serve the Vaishnavas.
Yeah.
And we should always remember Gurudev's maxim, you know, my religion is finding fault with myself, not looking to faults of others. Our own faults are enough to keep us occupied for the rest of this life and maybe many lives to come, I can say for my own self. And you know, it's another type of deflection when we spend our time looking at the faults of others. No, now's the time for us to, you know, to concentrate on our own selves and try to make ourselves fit. This is my feeling. Only that, you know, I think we still don't, at least I can say myself, I can't speak for everyone, but I can say for myself, I'm still yet to realize what great gift we had in the person of Srila Gurudev and what great gift he gave to us all the time, you know, by his presence, by his teaching, by his personal behavior, by his interaction with others, all of these things. They were such a valuable treasure, and we're yet to realize the full depth of that. But I think if we are sincere and true to ourselves, we will come to realize that. But without that realization, how will we be able to extend that to others? We have to pray for that, some understanding of the valuable nature of the gift that we got from him and that we got, that he himself was and is. It's not that, you know, we shouldn't speak in terms of, you know, that it's over now that he's gone, because our mission now individually, collectively, should be to try to connect with him on another plane,
right?
You know, on the higher plane, and then we'll see that he's not gone at all. He's with us all the time, you know. And if we can, you know, we can make, you know, slogans of, you know, Gurudev's, I am always with you and all this. But unless we try to deeply understand that and realize that, there's no meaning to it, you know, then that's how he's always with us. If we can follow him, if we can, you know, aspire to his service every day, then he's always with us. And I see you've been speaking for an hour and 10 minutes. It's just flying by, huh?
Yeah, so I know you could go on for much longer.
I could. Hopefully that's not just because I like the sound of my own voice.
Well, I won't say thank you.
Yeah, and that's one thing I can remember that too. Now you've reminded me. When we were in Heathrow Airport once,
and I
bought Gurudev a hot drink there while we were waiting, and I gave it to him, and he said to me, oh, Prabhu, Devashish Prabhu, you are an Englishman, so I want to say thank you. He said, but you are a disciple of Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Maharaj, so I cannot say thank you.